Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael, I just want to thank you, my friend, for again this incredible, wonderful opportunity for filling in for you tonight. Michael, I want to congratulate you on your successful book, Trickle Up Poverty. As you know, I reviewed it. I thought it was a magnificent book, and I'm happy to hear you go to michaelsavage.com. And this is not the last you're going to hear from Michael Savage in terms of his writing style and what he's going to deliver in terms of literary output. Michael is now going to go into fiction. He is going to do at least two political thrillers. And I have to tell you, Michael, I can't wait to read them. Go to michaelsavage.com, my friends. There are some must read stories. Stuff that you just cannot get anywhere else. It is your one-stop source for the most important news and political intelligence that you need. But before I talk about some of those very important stories, today is December 7th. It is Pearl Harbor Day. 69 years ago, on this fateful day, Japanese kamikaze aircraft led by Admiral Yamamoto, launched a devastating attack upon the Pacific Fleet, decimating U.S. naval power in the Pacific and launching us into World War II. And there was a time in this country, members of the Savage Nation, when people would remember Pearl Harbor Day, when this was a sacred day of remembering our dead and the fallen. Because on that fateful day, not only did we lose thousands of brave men, women, and sailors, but we were attacked upon our homeland. And that moment changed the course of history and the destiny of the United States. We were no longer an isolationist country. We were no longer a country that was now confined to the continental United States and North America. We emerged as a great superpower after that war. And when you think about then and today, look how what a different country we are. This is what I find staggering. What have I been doing the last couple of weeks besides writing for the Washington Times and whenever I can listening to the legend, Michael Savage? I've been reading about World War II. It's one of my favorite periods. And I am amazed when I read up about World War II. Take FDR, a liberal socialist president. Compare FDR then to the wannabe FDR in the White House today, that third-rate college professor, that Marxist college professor. Compare Obama to FDR. Hey, I disagree with FDR on many things, believe me. I think he was one of the great frauds and charlatans of the 20th century who put us on the road towards socialism. But say what you want about FDR. He was a closer. He understood that when you are attacked, when thousands of Americans are butchered and killed in a premeditated attack by our fascist enemies, you don't roll over. You don't play politically correct games. You don't go around and say, how will we be liked? We have to be tolerant and compassionate and understanding. We have to reach out to the Japanese and the Germans. We have to make sure that we don't offend German and Japanese American sentiment here at America. No. He waged total war for total victory. He mobilized the entire nation as he told Congress several days later, "This day shall be remembered and go down in infamy. For now America has been attacked." And just to show you what a different nation we were then, even the leader of the Japanese attack, frankly, an evil man, but as every historian acknowledges, maybe Japan's most brilliant general and strategist, their most brilliant military thinker, Admiral Yamamoto, he privately was telling the Japanese fascist leadership, "Don't do it. I'm telling you, don't do it. Yes, we'll be initially successful. Yes, we will cripple the Naval Pacific Fleet. Yes, we will bring the American giant temporarily on his knees. But what happens when the giant wakes up? What happens when the giant stands up? He will crush us." As he put it, when he heard news of the successful attack, he told his nearest aide, "I fear we have awakened a sleeping giant." And FDR knew how to use and run that giant. We air-bombed and carpet-bombed Germany. We fought the Japanese in island after island after island. We mobilized the entire country. There was a draft. There was a conscription. There was full and total mobilization. German saboteurs on American soil were captured, tried, convicted, and executed. We took enemies and saboteurs and spies seriously. We waged our war seriously. We had no problems intercepting the communications of our enemy. The press then was on our side. They were not postmodern internationalists. They were not there to shill for the Germans and the Japanese and the fascist butchers. They were Americans first and foremost. What do we have today with the New York Slimes? What do we have today with The Guardian and Der Spiegel, who stand there and reveal our state secrets and laugh, betraying us at every turn with this self-absorbed narcissist, Julian Assange, as he cripples our diplomacy all over the world and reveals our most intimate secrets? In fact, the radical left lionizes him as a hero. FDR knew how to win a war. What has Obama done? We are losing in Afghanistan. We are losing in Iraq. Do you honestly think FDR told our soldiers when they landed on the beaches of Normandy, "Now be careful now. Be careful. We got strict rules of engagement. Don't shoot up some French village. God forbid a civilian should be killed. Oh, we can't have that. We can't have that. Hey, don't bomb Dresden. Don't bomb those German cities. Hey, we could have civilians get killed. Hey, come on now." No, no, no. In fact, I have to reach out to Hitler. I have to reach out to Tojo. I have to tell them our war is with fascism. It's not with the Japanese people. It's not with the German people. We love the Germans. We love the Japanese. In fact, we so love you, we don't even want to fight you. No. This was a serious man in a serious time when we were once a serious country. And the question I have to ask, and there's no getting around this question, members of the Savage Nation, go to michaelsavage.com. Look at the top news story. You're not going to see this in the mainstream media. That's why Savage is Savage. Citibank sues Ground Zero mosque developer. I'm even going to say, "Jeff, what does this have to do with Pearl Harbor Day in World War II? Think of this. The developer of the Ground Zero Mosque, the man who now wants to build a Victory Mosque two blocks away from our modern day Pearl Harbor, where 3,000 Americans were butchered on September 11th in an act of war against the United States, in an act of genocide, the greatest war crime ever committed on American soil. Innocent Americans dead. Their families will mourn them forever. And what is this man, Sharif El-Gamal, doing? He owes Citibank $100,000 in overdue credit charges. He's not paying his bills. He wants to build a Victory Mosque worth over $100 million, 15 stories high, as a triumph to signify of radical Islam over America. And he owes Citibank $100,000. And as the story points out on MichaelSavage.com, what does he say? Hey, you owe $100,000. You're behind on your payments. No problem. It's going to force me into bankruptcy and I'll have to restructure my debt. I don't want to pay my bills. And then the story goes on. Now think about this. Do you think the boys that died on the beaches of Normandy, the sailors that were massacred on Pearl Harbor Day, all of those that sacrificed for our freedoms in World War II, you think they died for this? So not only the Ground Zero Mosque can be built, not only will it stand there and mock all of those that died, stand there and on our sacred ground, stand as a symbol of victory and triumph. But after 9/11, there is a massive fund, a taxpayer fund, paid for by you, by me, by Michael Savage, by all members of the Savage Nation and every American, to help build cultural projects in downtown New York, a federal fund, a post 9/11 fund for cultural projects, things like theaters, museums, to rebuild the heart of downtown New York and downtown Manhattan. What do you think this lowlife, Sharif El-Gamal, and his collaborator, the Imam, Faisal Abdul Rauf, they have applied for $5 million in grants from this federal fund? Not only are they going to build a Victory Mosque, not only are they going to commit an act of sacrilege against all of those that died on September 11th, not only are they going to tell us, we now even own Ground Zero, but we're going to rub your noses in it. We want your taxpayer dollars. Your money, blood money, is going to be used to build that mosque. Now I ask you, my friends, among us, is this what the boys died for in Normandy? Is this what we suffered for on December 7, 1941? Look what a long way we have come. We have gone from being a nation and a people who were once proud and great, who when attacked, rose up in unity and solidarity and destroyed our enemies that to this day, go to Tokyo, go to Berlin, and they will tell you, we have never forgotten World War II. The Yanks are coming. The Yanks are coming. We will never raise a finger against America. And now, look at Julian Assange. Look at the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and Iraq. Look at these cave dwellers who murder our soldiers at will. Look at these shysters, Sharif El-Gamal and Abdul Faisal Rauf, the Imam, building a Ground Zero mosque and even asking us to give our taxpayer dollars. And so my question to all of you is a simple one. Do you believe that we have turned our back on the memory of Pearl Harbor? Are we no longer the serious nation that we once were? And if we applied the rules of today, the rules of engagement, the rules of compromising with our enemies, could we have won World War II if Obama was in the White House? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Too many people, he wrote in his dissent, To many people, the superfluous, it's this lip, it's hard to say. You try it when you've had 12 stitches.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest must-read stories. Michael, I just want to thank you once again, my friend, for the incredible, wonderful opportunity of filling in for you tonight. Here is the tale of two presidents. The original great liberal FDR, and now this fraud, this con man in chief in the White House, who can't even string together a few words, even with a teleprompter in front of him. And he's got the media so in his tank, so in the tank, so in his pocket. Look at them laughing with him, giggling. Okay, Mr. President, try it again, Mr. President. Try it again, Mr. President. He's like a kindergarten child. He's got, how many times do you have to do it? Superfluous. How hard is it to say that, Mr. President? You're supposed to be a genius. They told us you're a genius. You're supposed to be the great liberal messiah. You're supposed to be the one, the chosen one. And instead, say what you want about that socialist FDR. Hey, he knew how to bomb Nazi Germany into oblivion. He knew how to break the back of Imperial Japan. I ask all of you, who fears Obama? Who fears America? Not the Taliban, not Al-Qaeda, and certainly not Julian Assange. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage. Over there, send the word over there. That the Yanks are coming, the Yanks are coming. The drums rum coming everywhere. So prepare.
The Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
Too many people, he wrote in his dissent, To many people, the superfluous, it's this lip, it's hard to say. You try it when you've had 12 stitches.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. If Obama was running World War II like FDR, do you think we would have beaten Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan? I want to hear from you. And more than that, have we changed as a country? As I mentioned earlier, just go to michaelsavage.com. Now we have a Ground Zero mosque developer, along with his Imam Rauf, not only building a Ground Zero mosque. Can you imagine? Just think about this. In 1947, 48, that Japanese Americans would insist that a Shinto shrine be built 600 feet from the site of Pearl Harbor. Can you imagine the outroar, the outrage? Can you imagine the anger across the country? Do you think they would even consider it? Would Truman, sitting in the White House, you think he would back it the way Obama backed the Ground Zero Mosque? And not only are they now pushing for a Ground Zero Mosque, no, the dumb infidel, let him pay for it. Now, as the story points out in MichaelSavage.com, now, they want $5 million in taxpayer money from a federal fund to to subsidize and build cultural projects in downtown Manhattan. They want $5 million for themselves. Hey, come on, let the dumb infidel pay for it. We're going to rub his nose into it. We're going to really shaft him. So not only are you going to build a mosque, hey, come on now. We're beyond that. You're going to pay for it. We are now going to tell you that we have triumphed over you. We murdered you. We massacred you. We are killing your troops all over the world. And now we're going to build a mosque with this militant imam who pushes for Sharia law and in fact says we had it coming on September 11th, and you're going to pay for it. And our president supports the imam. Our president supports the Ground Zero Mosque. Remember, this is the same commander-in-chief who has publicly and repeatedly said that one of his duties as president of the United States, now think about this, is to defend the image and reputation of Islam. Excuse me? Mr. President, with all due respect, your job is to defend the national interests of the United States. Your job is not to shill for Islam or Christianity or Buddhism or Shintoism or Judaism or any other faith. It is to defend the American people and American national interests. But no, according to him, no, we can't alienate the Muslim world. Can you imagine if FDR said, well, hold on now, one of my duties as president of the United States, because we have to be multicultural, we have to be sensitive, we have to be tolerant. Come on. Is, hey, I am here to defend Shintoism. That's one of my key duties. I want Japanese people to know all over the world, we love you, we welcome you, we embrace you. In fact, I think I'm partly Japanese. I think somewhere down the road, when they came off the Mayflower, one of my ancestors hooked up with a Japanese person. I think I have Japanese blood. I really do. And I want to apologize for all of the insults, all of our imperialism that we've committed in Asia against the Asian people and against the Japanese. They would have run them out of the White House. Instead, look at our dear leader. Look at that con man, that comrade in chief, who so hates his own country, who so hates his own people, he is not even willing to do what it takes to win the war in Afghanistan or even track down a man, Julian Assange, that saboteur, that spy, that anti-American charlatan, and get him arrested and bring him to the United States. No. No, he's got better things to do. He's playing basketball. He's got a cut lip. Hey, come on now. He can't read the teleprompter properly. Did you notice? Whenever George Bush made a gaffe in public, whenever George somehow misspoke or made one mistake, suddenly they pounced all over him. He was too stupid to be the commander-in-chief. What a moron George Bush was when it comes to the dear leader. Oh, it's so funny. He can't say superfluous. The dear leader, he got a couple of stitches on his lip. He was playing basketball. Our troops are dying, but hey, he's working on his basketball game. He's got to stay slim. He's got to stay sexy. Come on now. He's a dear leader. He's a celebrity. This is the difference. We were once a serious country. We understood that our president was a commander in chief. Today, he is a celebrity in chief. That's the difference. We were serious then. We were united then. We were determined then. Today, we ultimately don't give a damn. Not all of us. But many liberals, especially here in Washington, couldn't give a damn for any of our soldiers. And if no one else has the guts to say it, I will. Let's go to Tom in New York. Tom, thanks for holding.
Pearl Harbor Day, that's red, white, and blue dynamite, baby.
Thank you so much, Tom. What's on your mind, my buddy?
God bless you. Merry Christmas. Jeff, I really think we could have nipped this in the bud under President Bush. He started out strong. I'll smoke you out. I'll hunt you down. But when he said to the American people, the liberal outreach, we have to figure out why four men would crash two planes into our twin towers, and he put the burden and the emphasis on us. It's been downhill since then, Jeff, and I think he could have stopped this, and he ignited it, really.
Tom, I want to thank you for that call. You hit the nail on the head. There's no getting around it. In the end, everything that we are now suffering under Obama, the skyrocketing deficits, the inability to control and defend our borders, the massive healthcare monstrosity, our inability to win our wars, it all began under George Bush. It accelerated and intensified under Obama. It's gotten much worse. But to me, what I found stunning was this. Look, I'll never forget 9/11. I was driving through Washington, D.C. on my way to the Washington Times. It was like a ghost town. There was nobody in the streets. Nobody. I'll never forget that day. And I come into the newsroom. There's panic. There's pandemonium. People are crying. People are telling me some of their friends were on the flight, especially the one that crashed into the Pentagon. And everybody kept telling me, we will never forget this day. Really? Really? It's been 10 years. Many of you seem to me like you forgot it awfully fast. Forget Pearl Harbor. We can't even remember 9/11. We can't even say as a country, out of respect to those that died on that fateful day, those that were butchered in cold blood, remember, they weren't combatants. Even if you say, well, Jeff, we're at war with Islam. Yes. But what do people working at the Twin Towers, what do they have to do with anything? They went to work to feed their families. They did nothing to nobody. In fact, many of them were Muslims. And they were slaughtered in cold blood. And now we are to build a mosque literally two blocks from that site when these attacks were committed in the name of Islam by Islamic extremists. And now, according to this story on michaelsavage.com, not only are they going to build it, but they want you to pay for it through this fund. So, I mean, you tell me what has happened to us as a nation. And now Bush, the minute the attack occurred, here's what I said to everybody in the newsroom. Well, he's going to be a war leader now. So if he's going to be a war leader, he's going to implement the draft. We're all going to have to be called to win this war. No, what did Bush do? We're going to go shopping. We have to go shopping. Remember he said, go shopping, go bowling. We have to return to normalcy. So I ask all of you, what was the difference between World War II and this war? What was the difference between the first war on fascism and now the war on Islamic fascism? It's this. In World War II, we were all in it together. Either you were off fighting or you were on the home front working in some factory. Everybody was putting in. Everybody was carrying their weight. Everybody was carrying their water. Instead, how is it fair that a small percentage of the population, the bravest of the brave, the most patriotic of the patriotic, they're the ones, the volunteer army, they're the ones that are fighting and dying in Afghanistan and Iraq. We're not fighting. We're not dying. I even said it to my wife on Sunday. I said, honey, you know what it is in 2 days from now? She said, what? Pearl Harbor Day. She goes, really? I go, yeah. You know, nobody cares. Nobody even cares that as we speak right now, there is a huge battle raging in Afghanistan. We have already lost 9 of our boys this week alone. I bet nobody out there can even name me one of their names. Unless you're a service, a member of a family, a member of a service member, a family member. If you're a family of a service member. That's it. They're dying. And we bear no burden. We bear no responsibility. It's like it's another war happening on, but with a fight fought by somebody else in another time, in another place. That's why a guy like Julian Assange can roam the world with impunity. That's why you can have an Eric Holder come out 5 months after that initial document dump, which gave away the people that were helping us in Iraq and Afghanistan, give us their names and identities, and he still hasn't put together legislation to prosecute this guy? You have a president who apologizes to the Muslim world after we liberated 50 million Muslims? Hey, come on. My friends, we are no longer a serious power. We've become a joke. We have become a joke. So let's not even compare Obama to FDR. There's no comparison. There's none. Say what you want about FDR. Hey, he literally made her really quake and made him commit hara-kiri. Literally, he said, these Americans, they're bombing us to oblivion. They're bombing Tokyo. They're bombing our cities. Harry Truman came in, not one but two atomic bombs. That's how you win a war. Today, if I was to say to you, hey, let's smash Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in those tribal areas in the Afghan-Pakistan border, let us drop a nuclear bomb and break Al-Qaeda right there and then, what would you say to me? You're crazy, Jeff. You're an extremist. You're a nut job. You're a right-wing nut job. So you tell me, how can we win this war with the rules of engagement that we have? With a commander-in-chief who doesn't even speak in terms of victory. He won't even tell us who the enemy is. Our national security documents. Hey, say what you want about FDR. Look, you heard some of those clips. Japan attacked us. Imperial Japan attacked us. Throughout the entire war, Hitler's Germany, the Germans will be defeated and broken and annihilated. We can't even say Islam, Muslim, radical Islam, Islamic extremists. No, it's intolerant. You'll have CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, filing a lawsuit. No. You go through an airport. You go through an airport now. You're an 80-year-old Christian grandmother from Iowa. No, they gotta frisk you. They gotta feel you up. They gotta feel you up. You're a 3-year-old toddler. They take your shirt off. No, the 3-year-old toddler. No, he's a jihadist. He's a wannabe jihadist. The 19-year-old Yemen exchange student. Who's studying Islamic studies. Don't touch him, that's profiling. Don't touch him, that's profiling. I was just telling this to somebody the other day. I went through the airport. I was flying back from Canada, minding my own business. I swear to you, I felt like I was at a gay bar. The guy pulls me over, the TSA agent. He sniffs me. He goes, hey, that's very nice cologne. What's the cologne? I'm like, that's really none of your business. I mean, are you going to pat me down? Yes or no? Okay. He's grabbing my private parts. He's feeling me up. I'm thinking like, I swear I felt sexually molested. If anybody else did what this man did, they would rightly be charged with sexual harassment and sexual molestation, because we cannot say the obvious that we are at war with radical Islam. So I ask you, on Pearl Harbor Day, could we defeat the Japanese and the Germans today with the president that we have? 1-800-449-8255. I'll take your calls right after the break here on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. Let's go to Dave in Dallas, Texas, on line 2. Dave, thanks for holding, and welcome to the Savage Nation.
We as the American people are like the bullied kid in the schoolyard. You know, we got a blitzkrieg of ideas from these socialists that we have in our office coming in from every direction, up, down, left, and right. We're flailing our arms. Some of us are flailing our arms to survive, and others are just, they're distracted, you know, by reality television, by cell phones, by iPods, by this and that. And sadly, Jeff, I don't know if we can ever rebound from the damage that has been done.
Dave, look, that's the $64,000 question, and I want to thank you for that call. Will we be able to rebound? I mean, there's no question about it. The damage has been immense. We have lost essentially in Iraq. Iraq is a failed state. Iran has now taken it under its sphere of influence. So we essentially fought that war in Iraq to advance the interests of Iran because of the failure of Bush and especially Obama. We are now losing in Afghanistan. You are now seeing terrorist sanctuaries all over the world. Our power has now never been weaker. We have never been less feared or less respected. Now even some moron with a laptop can now bring us to our knees internationally. So this is what we've been reduced to. And so whether we can come back, I don't know. It depends upon us. It depends upon middle America. I think in the end, the country is going to say enough is enough. I don't even think Obama, frankly, is going to finish his term. I know everybody says, Jeff, you're crazy. I'm telling you, there are so many skeletons in his closet. There is so much corruption and abuse of power and incompetence with this regime. I think the Republicans are going to have no choice but to launch impeachment proceedings. And you can see the whole gang, all of these Chicago gangsters, be chased out of town. Let us very quickly go to Alex in San Diego. Alex, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Great, thank you. The big difference between the war we're fighting today and World War II, there's many, but what I'm looking at is one, embedded reporters. Now, with that said, in World War II, there were embedded photographers and reporters. However, they did not have the agenda of the media today. The whole purpose for them being there was not to catalog the war and do a documentary, but to show how bad America was. That's why when I blame Bush and the leaders of the previous administration, when they said we will allow the press to go in with the waves in Iran, I said, oh, forget it. We've lost already. Because I knew that all they want to do is paint the picture of us being evil, of us killing the women and children.
You nailed it, Alex. You nailed it. Look, this is the difference between now and then. Then we had a press corps that wanted us to win. They knew that Hitler was evil. They knew that Mussolini was evil. They knew that the Japanese fascists were evil. Today, we have a press led by the New York Times that openly publishes our most intimate secrets. They're even telling the world how we intercept phone calls and communications among terrorists. They're aiding and abetting terrorists. They are traitors to their own country. And this is what Savage has been telling America for years. And for this, he has been crucified. But my friends, like on so many other things, Mr. Savage is right. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend here on The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Michael is off tonight, but I am filling in for him. Michael, I just want to thank you once again, my buddy and good friend, for the wonderful honor and opportunity of guest hosting for you tonight. And Michael, just one more time, I really want to congratulate you on your outstanding book. It's clearly the political book of the year, Trickle Up Poverty. I believe it is one of those books that was pivotal to the conservative resurgence that we saw in November and the shellacking that the Democrats received on the November 2nd midterm elections. And Michael, I just can't wait for you to start cranking out those political thrillers. I'm sure we're going to see a couple of more bestsellers skyrocketing up the charts in no time. Members of the Savage Nation, I urge every one of you, go to michaelsavage.com. Some sizzling must-read stories up there. Today, President Obama did the dirty deed. In a press conference, he addressed his liberal critics and said, you know what? I had to compromise with the Republicans. I had to at least temporarily extend the hated Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, those making over $250,000 a year. Since when did making $250,000 a year qualify you as, quote, the rich? But let that go. According to the dear leader, he had to make this compromise. Go to michaelsavage.com. You will get the latest on this very important story. Obama whacks liberal critics of tax cuts compromise. Democrat leaders rip tax deal. In other words, what you will see on michaelsavage.com is what many now are starting to realize here in Washington. This is Obama's final betrayal. He has betrayed everybody, and now he has even betrayed his liberal base. And facing fire from many in the liberal leftist media saying, "Dear leader, you told us you were going to repeal those Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. Here is Obama trying to justify what for many on the left is the unjustifiable." Boys, roll clip four.
I believe this bipartisan plan is the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do for jobs. It's the right thing to do for the middle class. Mm-hmm. It is the right thing to do for business. And it's the right thing to do for our economy.
Yeah.
It offers us an opportunity that we need to seize. It's not perfect.
No.
This compromise is an essential step on the road to recovery.
Yeah.
It will stop middle-class taxes from going up.
Yeah.
It'll spur our private sector to create millions of new jobs and add momentum that our economy badly needs.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, watching him at this press conference today, I got the sense for the first time in his presidency that he is willing to throw in the towel. He looked like a defeated man today. Literally. I honestly thought he was going to walk up there, and now when the liberal press is finally challenging him, saying, "Well, hold on now. Dear leader, what is your line in the sand?" Because for the last 2 years, going even back 2 years before, during the 2008 presidential campaign, what has been the holy grail of liberalism, both in Washington and across the country? What has the MoveOn.org, the Huffington Post, all of these rabid leftists in the media, the New York Times, the Paul Krugmans, the Frank Riches, all of these leftists, that whole leftist cabal, led by the dear leader himself, what have they been saying? That the greatest evil in domestic policy perpetrated under the Bush regime was apparently tax cuts for the wealthy. Tax cuts for the rich. Tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. Class warfare was the essence of Obama's liberal campaign of 2008. It was his seminal promise. He was going to repeal the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. Remember what he said. He was not going to raise taxes on any family making less than $250,000. But above $250,000, no. That was his Maginot line. That was his indefensible wall. This was the wall. This was the line that was supposedly impregnable. Well, just like the Germans when they invaded France in World War II, the Republicans went right around that wall. They broke the Democrats in November, and now Mitch McConnell and John Boehner broke Obama at the negotiating table. And so the question I have to be asking myself is a very simple one. Many of you are going to say, "Well, hold on, Jeff. You're a conservative. You're a free marketeer. You believe in tax cuts. You believe tax cuts are necessary to stimulate the economy and create jobs. You certainly don't believe you should raise taxes in the middle of a recession. That would be economic suicide, never mind political suicide." But that's not the issue. The issue goes to the core of this man. The issue goes to what kind of a leader he is. If he has been telling us for years that this is his line in the sand, that this is what he feels most passionately and most strongly about, and if he gets rolled by Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, what do you think an Ahmadinejad is going to do to him? I am a nut job. What do you think a Putin is going to do to him? What do you think the Chinese communist leaderships are going to do to him? If a Boehner or a McConnell can just steamroll him, what do you think these leaders can do to him? What they have been doing for the last 2 years. What you saw today was a pathetic, pitiful performance by a president who has now essentially lost his majority in Congress. He is losing the support of the American people, and now he is even losing support among liberal Democrats. Even they're saying, "Well, hold on. Isn't this something that we as Democrats supposedly hold as sacred? Aren't we class warriors? Don't we want to soak the rich? Isn't this the essence of what we stand for? Aren't we redistributionist socialists? Don't we want to spread the wealth?" And instead, what Obama showed, and there is no getting around this, members of the Savage Nation. Yes, he's a socialist. Yes, he rammed through health care. Yes, he's nationalized Wall Street and the insurance industry and the big banks. Yes, he wants amnesty for illegal immigrants. Yes, 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 there's no question about it. But in the end, he is a coward. In the end, he is nothing more than a typical radical Marxist bully. He is a political thug. When he had the votes in Congress, oh, then he was a macho man. Oh, then he wouldn't listen to the American people. No, 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 no. Then he would ram anything down our throats. But now, faced with some real opposition, where are you, Mr. Tough Guy? All of a sudden now, he breaks like a twig. Literally, he's like a skinny little twig. It's like the Republicans had him on the bus, like a pathetic, whimpering college professor, explaining why he had to make a deal with the devil. And so now, he has betrayed the last constituency left. If you look at Obama's presidency, he betrayed our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. He has betrayed our allies all over the world. Israel, Poland, the Czech Republic, South Korea. Every time our enemies have attacked one of our allies or friends or threatened to, we back away. He has betrayed Middle America. He has betrayed conservatives. He has betrayed our children and grandchildren with the skyrocketing deficits that threaten to bankrupt this country. And now comes the final betrayal. Now comes the final knife in the back. Now he betrayed one of his own. Now he has betrayed even his own liberal friends. And listen to Bernie Sanders, the socialist from Vermont, rail on the Senate floor, saying, you know what? We have been conned by the con man in chief. After telling us that we should fight for taxes on the rich and taxes on millionaires and billionaires, he caves and capitulates and leaves us high and dry. Boys, roll the clip.
I think it is an absolute disaster and an insult to the vast majority of the American people to be talking about giving huge tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country, driving up our deficit and increasing the growing gap between the very rich and everybody else.
There's Bernie Sanders. I just want to make a quick correction. That was not on the Senate floor. My bad. That was an interview with MS Left BC, or I like to call them North Korean television. So there he is on North Korean television telling them, hey, come on, this is an insult. This is an absolute insult. And you know what? On this one, I'm with Bernie. He's completely right. If I'm a left winger, if I'm a socialist, if I'm a liberal, you're damn right I feel betrayed. Look at the disarray of the Democratic Party. Look what a radical Obama is. Look how politically reckless he is. Look how narcissistic and selfish he is. He turns on his own political base. It's not enough to stab our troops in the back. It's not enough to stab this country in the back. It's not enough to stab our allies and friends in the back. No, he stabs his own political friends in the back. And this is what I have been saying about this guy from the get-go. More even than being a Marxist, more than even being a socialist and an anti-American, he is a con man from the south side of Chicago, and he has conned his way to the highest office in the land, because in the end, Barack Obama cares about one thing and one thing only, and that is himself and his power. And so my question to you is a simple one. Do you believe that this decision today to cut a deal with Republicans on temporarily extending the Bush tax cuts for all income levels, is this the beginning of the end of the Democratic Party come 2012? Has Obama committed political suicide by alienating the liberals in his own party? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage. Let's go to Mike in South Carolina on line 3. Mike, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thanks a lot. First of all, I want to commend President Obama for what he did yesterday by compromising. I believe he did what was in the best interest of the country. The Democrats and the Republicans want to continue to play politics, but I think he looked out for the little guy by making sure that the unemployment benefits are extended. As a country, we bail.
Mike, hold on. Mike, let me ask you this. I mean, how does extending welfare benefit Americans or America? I mean, this is what I don't understand. Everybody keeps saying, oh, the sky's going to fall, the sky's going to fall. Mike, you know, benefits are supposed to last unemployment 3, maybe 6 months. They're not supposed to last 99 weeks. A lot of people have been on welfare, unemployment insurance, for a year and a half. Are you going to tell me there aren't jobs out there? There are plenty of jobs out there. No, they have an incentive not to work. That's the problem with extending unemployment. And who's going to pay for all this? These deficits just keep, you know, getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And we are essentially bankrupting ourselves for what? So people can live off welfare? I mean, do you think that's right, Mike, that people should be living off welfare? Why should I keep subsidizing people who don't want to work? Explain that to me, Mike.
Let me give you a good example why. Because if, as long as you and your family are eating, but your neighbor, when he stops eating, then guess what? He's going to come knock on your door. Now, do I agree with welfare? No. But I do think that there are policy issues that need to be changed, and I think that these people should be trained while they are receiving benefits. Now, I would agree with that. But we need to close down the fish market and open up the lake and allow people to fish. So as long as my neighbor's eating, then I don't have to worry about him coming and taking from me. So that's the reason why you want to extend the benefits, but you also want to train.
Well, I mean, Mike, look, there are a lot of people who are poor. Doesn't mean they go and start killing and murdering and robbing people. This is what, I mean, come on. I mean, we're not a nation of savages. There are people, go to Appalachia. People have been poor in the Appalachian region going back decades. Nobody gives a damn about them. They're not going around butchering each other. So, you know, Mike, I'm sorry, that argument just doesn't work for me. Here is the bigger problem. Yes, I'm for the tax cuts being extended. Of course, I don't believe you should raise taxes in a recession. It's absolutely insane. My question is a bigger one. To all, you know, you're an Obama supporter, all these Obama supporters. He was the one that was telling us it's the unjust tax code. It's all of these tax breaks for the wealthy. That's why we have these big deficits. It's a lie. But that's his argument, that we can't recover as a nation until we start taxing the rich and the wealthy. That was the central promise of his 2008 campaign. That's what he's been arguing almost every day for 2 years. And now, all of a sudden, he turns on a dime. All of a sudden, no. I have to cut a deal with Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. And so what you're now seeing, Mike, is his left flank is abandoning him. I just played you Bernie Sanders. I'm telling you this, Nancy Pelosi is not happy. Harry Reid, Dirty Harry, is not happy because they rightly see this guy just knifed them in the back. So if this is a point of principle for you, Mr. President, if this is a point that you have been saying threatens the future of our country, that's his argument, not mine. No, we can't afford to raise taxes on millionaires and billionaires. The sky's going to fall. Well, why did you just cave and capitulate? Because in the end, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's out of his depth. He's out of his league. He's nothing more than a shyster from the south side of Chicago. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Here is Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke essentially in an interview telling us that after printing nearly $1 trillion of money, $600 billion to be exact, after amassing the highest deficits this country has ever seen, after nearly bankrupting us with stimulus package after stimulus package after stimulus package. Ben Bernanke is now telling us, essentially, Obamanomics has failed. We may be printing money. We may be destroying the value of the dollar. We may very soon end up like Weimar Germany, where you have to go with a wheelbarrow full of cash just to buy a loaf of bread. All of this under him and Obama and tax cheat Tim Geithner. But, you know, it's going to be a very long time, Ben Bernanke says, until, in fact, people who are unemployed are actually going to be able to have a job. Here is Ben Bernanke essentially telling us we are now in the midst of a de facto Great Depression. Boys,
more than 40% of the unemployed have been unemployed for 6 months or more, and that's unusually high. And people who are unemployed for such a long time, their skills erode, their attachment to the labor force diminishes, and it may be a very, very long time before they find themselves back in a normal working position.
Really? You think so, huh? You think so? Good time, Ben? So good times are rolling. You're spending our money like there's no tomorrow. You're printing money like there's no tomorrow. And so after all of these trillion-dollar deficits, mortgaging the future of our children and grandchildren, you all of you came out and said, no, we have to rescue Goldman Sachs. All of your cronies and friends at Citibank, at Goldman Sachs, all of those, no, they got to be taken care of. Oh, the whole financial system would collapse. We'd have a Great Depression, Ben Bernanke told us. That's what Obama told us. That's what Bush told us. All of these crony capitalists were telling us, no, we have to rescue the banks. We need TARP money. We need stimulus money. We need bailout money. We got to print money. And all of a sudden, these unemployment's been going on for such a long time. I don't know if these people are ever going to have a normal working position again. And so then, after telling us this, he then says this. This is to me what is unbelievable. This to me is a bombshell. That in fact, it's going to take us at least 4 or 5 years. Remember, we've had this now going on for 3 years and counting. So this is almost, remember, the Great Depression lasted the whole 1930s. It was a 10-year thing before the war came and essentially ended the Great Depression. So basically, he's telling us the last 3 years, no, we're just in the middle of this thing. It's going to be another 4 or 5 years before we have a decent unemployment rate. Boys, roll clip 8.
Between the peak and the end of last year, we lost 8.5 million jobs.
Mm-hmm.
We've only gotten about 1 million of them back so far.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't even account the new people coming into the labor force. At the rate we're going, it could be 4 or 5 years before we are back to a more normal unemployment rate, somewhere in the vicinity of, say, 5 or 6%.
So what about all those trillions of dollars that we spent? What about that massive trillion-dollar stimulus package? What about all those public works? What about all that pork barrel spending? What about nationalizing the healthcare sector? What about all of this massive government expansion of power that you and Obama have been engaged in? The printing of the money, priming the pump. What happened? By your own admission, you just said to us that from over the peak until the end of last year, we've lost 8 million jobs. We've been hemorrhaging jobs under Obama. So obviously what you've been doing, your taxing, spending, and borrowing has failed. And now look what they're doing. They are now telling us that 10% unemployment, that this period of economic stagnation is the new normal. That's what he's telling us. Get ready. This is going to be a long time before you even see 5, 6% unemployment the way it used to be before the great financial crisis. In other words, just as FDR's New Deal failed to get us out of the Great Depression, Obamanomics, big government liberalism, socialism has been a complete failure to get us out of the great financial crisis. We're now in the middle of another Great Depression. This is what Ben Bernanke is essentially telling us. And they have no clue, none, how to get us out of it. All they're doing is driving us deeper and deeper and deeper into the ground. They're just digging a deeper hole. So now they're destroying our dollar. They're printing money, which is going to lead to massive inflation. They are now spending us into oblivion. We are now on the verge of becoming the United States of Argentina. And it's not even working. It's one thing to mortgage the future of your children and grandchildren. And you can at least say, well, look at this beautiful estate I built. It's beautiful. The grass is green. There's a beautiful jacuzzi. There's a beautiful pool. Look at the servants. Look what I've built. Sure, it's all on debt. It's all on credit. But hey, look what I've built. This is like a massive stag party where everybody's snorting lines of cocaine and the whiskey's flowing and the call girls are jumping in and out of bed. It's like Charlie Sheen. It's like a regular night for Charlie Sheen or Julian Assange when he hits Sweden. Okay, when he's off to Sweden partying it up with those Swedish girls. All right? And then your children and grandchildren not only have to clean up the mess, they have to pay the bill. This is what we're doing under Obama and under Ben Bernanke. And so the question that I have to ask all of you is this. Do you really believe that Obama has any clue what he's doing to get us out of this recession? Are you confident in Obama's leadership? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Is this like Japan in the 1990s? Do you think we're going to have essentially a Great Depression or a Great Recession for 10 years? Are you ready for this? Let's go to Wes in Sacramento on line 7. Wes, thanks for holding, and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Jeff. No, he has no clue. But I have to say that at least he bent over and speaking about the extending the tax, the Bush tax cuts, he did a good thing there. The rest of it I'm not so sure about. But no, he's alienated his Democrats, but I'm going to tell you what, the Democrats better wake up. They can go ahead and alienate him. They're next on the chopping block. The Americans are tired of dealing with this guy, and they're tired of dealing with the rest of the cronies that are, you know, on the left side of this aisle.
Thanks, Wes. Look, I think it's clear. If I was a Democrat and I saw that deal that he cut with the Republicans behind essentially their backs, and he essentially hung us out to dry as a liberal Democrat, I'd be furious. Remember, this is very important. People, you know, a lot of stuff goes on in Washington, D.C. He was the one, when he had those big majorities in the House and the Senate, what did the con man in chief, what did the comrade in chief say? The dear leader, all knowing, all wise, the Messiah, could do no wrong. Okay, could do no wrong. Hey, according to Evan Thomas of Newsweek, he's like God. He stands above the earth. He stands above the world. That's how great Obama was. Okay, the dear leader comes in. And Nancy Pelosi is worried, and Dirty Harry Reid's worried, and all these Democrats are saying, are you reading the poll numbers, Mr. President? They don't want this health care bill. Rahm Emanuel was pleading with him, saying, you don't understand, this is going to be our Waterloo. We are going to lose our majorities. We're going to get politically decimated if we ram this thing through. No, he came out publicly. Not only was he going to ram Obamacare, he wanted to fight on Obamacare. He was going to fight the midterm on Obamacare. This was a political winner. Remember what he was saying? This is not only great policy, it's great politics. The American people don't know what's good for them. They're going to love government medicine. They're going to love socialized medicine. Oh, you don't know how good you have it until you get Obamacare. So they walk the plank. 63 Democrats politically crushed and defeated. 6 lost in the Senate. They've lost practically everything on Capitol Hill. I walk the plank for this guy. I lose our majority over this guy. And now, after I do all of this for you, I carry water for you. After privately many of us were telling you this is political suicide. You do the economy first, not healthcare. We need this like we need a hole in the head. And then he just cuts a deal with Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. There's no one left to betray. You're shafted. And so what you're going to see happen, mark my words, you heard it here first on the Savage Nation. Obama is going to face a primary challenge in 2012. That he is going to have people come out of the woodwork who are going to challenge him for the nomination the way Ted Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter in 1980. He is going to be bloodied and beaten and hemorrhaging political support before he even gets to the general election campaign in 2012. What he did was cut his own political throat. And so I don't know what they're doing in the White House. In fact, I know what they're doing in the political White House. The geniuses in the political White House are telling him, no, you got to grab the middle. Barack, you got to grab the middle. You see, the middle wants these tax cuts to be temporarily extended, so you got to go grab the middle. But he's lost his left. He's alienated anybody, everybody. He's not getting the middle back. Middle America has seen him for what he is. He can't control these deficits. He can't get us out of this economic recession. Obamacare is going to destroy the greatest healthcare system in the world. He can't secure our borders. He doesn't even want to. He wants amnesty. And he can't win our wars. So if you can't do that, what good are you to me? What good are you to me as a president of the United States? So to me, if I was Barack Obama, what I would do is I would talk to Michelle. I'd sit down and say, Michelle, keep weightlifting. I want you to keep pumping those arms. They got to be nice, toned, and sexy. Because when we get kicked out of office in 2012, we need our own reality TV show. Barack in the West Wing. And you and I can continue to act like president and first lady. We can walk around, show off our pecs, show off our sexy chest, our stomach, walk on the beach, eat, drink like we've been doing for the last year, vacation in Hawaii, you show off your arms, and the media can then speculate, what's sexier, my pecs or her arms? Her arms or my pecs? Because that's all this guy's got going for him. Mr. President, I'm telling you, model for GQ, go for a reality TV show, you can compete with Paris Hilton, you can compete with Jersey Shore, you can compete with the best of them. Life in the Obama bubble. Because your days as president are over. You can't even do the basics of politics. Take care of your friends and allies. He has no support left on Capitol Hill. My friends, trust me on this. The left will never forgive him for this. And they shouldn't. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Members of the Savage Nation, breaking news. This occurred about an hour ago. Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of John Edwards, has passed away from her battle with cancer. She was 61 years of age. She had fought cancer. She had been in a battle with cancer for many years. And my thoughts and prayers go out to her and to her entire family. Regardless of our political differences, I feel extremely bad for Elizabeth Edwards. I don't think any wife should have to have endured what she endured with her husband. To me, John Edwards is one of the lowest bottom feeders you can possibly find on this planet. I don't understand the mentality of a man who, when his wife is diagnosed with cancer, is fighting for her very life. This is a woman that bore him his children. She is the mother of your children. And not only do you run around and cheat on her and have an affair on her as she's battling cancer, but you actually film it. You take a videotape of it and you film it. And you have a love child with her. And as the press closes in on the story, you then have your chief of staff become the fall guy, and you claim that he was the one who was the father of the love child. You twist his arm and bribe him to be the father of the love child. And what kind of a moral monster, what kind of an amoral sociopath are you that you have no feeling whatsoever? Not even the most basic human decency to respect your wife when she is fighting for her very life. This is the kind of man that John Edwards is. And, you know, I have to tell you, I know what it's like to be in a family where somebody that is very precious and dear to you has been battling cancer. My mother battled cancer, God bless her soul, for over 5 years. She first had breast cancer, and then she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And she gave a valiant fight. She struggled for years with it. She finally succumbed to it. And I have to say, to me, the thought that to have an affair on my mother when she is literally fighting for every gasp of breath that she can have, to me, you're just less than human. And so I know what cancer patients go through. I have seen it with my own eyes, the chemotherapy, the loss in weight, the loss of taste buds, where you begin to lose the very things that all of us take for granted. Going to the bathroom when you need to go, eating a decent meal, having the energy to even take a walk. The most basic things of life are slowly stripped away from you. And to have to then endure this moral betrayal, this moral humiliation, as you are now fighting a fatal illness, when you see your life racing in front of you, I can't imagine what this poor woman must have gone through. And so if you want to understand what is the problem with modern day America, you want to see the kinds of politicians that we have in Washington, D.C., Republicans and Democrats, look at John Edwards, because there are many John Edwards in Washington. It is full of John Edwards, people who are so unscrupulous, so consumed with ambition, so consumed with the desire to be famous, so consumed with greed and the lust for power, that nothing is sacred to them. Not their country, not their friends, not their co-workers, not even their family, not even the mother of their children. And so now, this trial lawyer, this man who's made millions of dollars, this ambulance chaser who's been gouging companies with these reckless lawsuits, impoverishing people, basically enriching himself upon the misery of others, is now going to go through this phony ritual of somehow, you know, feel sorry for me. I feel so bad. I'm going through a very tough time. This has been very difficult for me and my family right now as we've been struggling. And this is the kind of man that John Edwards is. And all I can just say to the Edwards family is this. I know what you went through to the kids. I know what it is to lose a mother, and to lose a mother as she has fought with every fiber in her being to overcome cancer. I know the indignity that this disease imposes upon you. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. She is in a better place, and you too will come out of the darkness of your mourning. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Michael, my buddy, I just want to thank you one more time, my friend, for the wonderful honor and opportunity to fill in for you tonight. You have a superb show and an absolutely superb audience. Members of the Savage Nation, I urge all of you, go to michaelsavage.com for some of the most important sizzling stories you just cannot find anywhere else. I mean, this is, you want to talk about a one-stop source of critical issues of the day, political intelligence stories you just can't find anybody else. Let me just give you a random sampling. Citibank sues Ground Zero mosque developer. Oh, so now we find out that one of the developers of the Ground Zero Mosque, in fact, owes $100,000 in credit card charges. So not only are they militant jihadists, no, that's not enough. No. They're also defrauding people. Hey, who would have thought that? Wikigate, you can't gag me. Here's WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange telling the London Daily Mail, right there on michaelsavage.com, listen, you can put me in jail, but I'm going to keep on releasing secret files and classified information. My friends, what I find absolutely stunning is this. How is it that the world's greatest superpower, a country that is stronger than Rome, than the British Empire, than any other great power in human history, is now literally helpless in the face of one man with a laptop? Our enemies are laughing at us. The jihadists literally must be dancing in their caves, saying if America cannot even take care or prosecute or silence a man who is giving away their most classified, intimate secrets and information, if they can't stop him, how can they defeat us? It is, to me, absolutely remarkable. You continue going down, michaelsavage.com. I mean, scariest ever jobs chart shows unemployment at its worst since World War II. So now the unemployment rate is at its worst point since the end of the Second World War. So we have spent trillions of dollars. We have bankrupted the futures of our children and grandchildren. And the unemployment rate is not getting any better. In fact, it's so bad, it hasn't been this bad in over half a century. If this is not showing to you what Dr. Savage has been saying for years, namely that liberalism is a mental disorder, then what more proof do you need? So we are now engaged in policy after policy, spend, borrow, tax, and now the jobs picture, the unemployment rate, is as bad as it has, as it's ever been in over 50 to 60 years. And this is the key point, my friends. What we have been seeing for the last couple of years is not your ordinary recession. This is the great myth. This is the great lie. Because recessions come and go. We have had recessions since the beginning of human history. Every economist worth his salt will tell you that. Recessions are part of life. The economy goes up, the economy goes down. It expands, it contracts. It expands, it contracts. What we have been seeing for the last 3 years is a financial crisis. This is what caused the Great Depression. You see, people don't realize that the Great Depression was caused because of the disaster of World War I. It was systemic. We had lent so much money to the Allies in the fight against Germany and Austria-Hungary and the Turks. When we on the Allied side were fighting the Central European powers, so much money had been lent to our friends, the British and the French and the Russians, that when the war was over, they couldn't pay off their debts. And so they punished the Germans. And when the Germans were punished, They had to pay war reparations, but they couldn't make their payments because they were so severe and serious. So the whole financial system came crashing down. They were making loans that there was no possibility of them paying it back. And then the bill came due in the 1930s. This is what happened throughout the 1990s and 2000. Our financial system went crazy. And the bubble grew and the bubble grew and the bubble grew. And then it burst. And so literally billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars were siphoned off and stolen by the likes of Goldman Sachs. They plundered the American economy. It's like those gangsters in Russia. It's like Putin and his oligarchs. They made out like bandits. Follow the money. Who has been making the most money out of all of this? The bailouts, the TARP funds. It's Goldman Sachs. It's Citigroup. It's all of this Wall Street financial cabal. That, and of course, Hank Paulson ties to Goldman Sachs. Tim Geithner ties to Goldman Sachs. Ben Bernanke ties to Goldman Sachs. It's like an old boys club. So as the fat get fatter, as the rich get richer, we, the ordinary people, are being plundered. We are being stolen from. They are living off the fat of the land. And we are the ones that have to pay for it. This is why this is recession is not a recession. It's a financial crisis. So many of you will say, well, hold on, Jeff. Okay, michaelsavage.com. Scariest ever jobs chart shows unemployment at its worst since World War II. It hasn't been this bad since the end of the Great Depression. What do we do? Very simple. I am a capitalist. I am a constitutionalist. I am a nationalist. I believe it is time that we put our interests first and foremost. No more bailouts to the banks. No more bailouts to GM. No more bailouts to all of the cronies that have been bleeding this country white for the past several decades. That's it. It's over. You've had a good time. The party is now coming to an end. We are not going to bail out the financial industry. We're not going to bail out all the financial giants. We're not going to bail out Chrysler and GM. Those days are over. You sink or swim on your merits. That's the capitalist system. You privatize Social Security. You privatize Medicare and Medicaid. People can take care of their own health care. It's called insurance. When you are hungry and you need to eat, what do? You go to the store and you buy yourself something to eat. You go to a restaurant and you buy yourself something to eat. If the government shouldn't be controlling and selling you the food that you need to live on, why should they control your health care? Why should they control your pensions? Why can't you invest in your own pensions? My grandfather, who came from the old country, God bless his soul, he saved for his own retirement. He didn't need the government to put money away for him. He put money away for himself. In fact, what I found remarkable about my grandfather is he lived through World War II. He suffered under a Nazi concentration camp for a year and a half. He then suffered under a communist concentration camp for 3 years. They took away everything he had, but he bounced back. And even though they beat him, they tortured him, they imprisoned him, they took away his very dignity, he still managed to make a life for his family. He was undaunted. He was unbowed. He was unbroken. Now I ask you, if our forefathers, if they didn't need Social Security, if they didn't need Medicare, if they didn't need Obamacare, if they don't need 99-week unemployment checks, 99 weeks, that's almost 2 years. Who the hell stays unemployed for 2 years? Get a job. Whatever happened, my grandfather was too proud to take a welfare check. My father God bless him, never took a welfare check or an unemployment check a day in his life. He said to me, son, it is a shame for me to live off somebody else's money. It's not my money. It's their money. Somebody works hard for that money. Why should I take off of their money and live off of it? I'm nothing more than a mooch, than a parasite, than a bum if I do that. Now, don't get me wrong. You're out of work. We don't live in an agricultural society. You don't have a farm. You don't have food that you can raise for yourself. I understand. Unemployment insurance, we need it. 3 months, 6 months, okay. You pay into a system. Then when you need it, you have it. It lasts you 3 months, 6 months until you find another job. But instead, what everybody looks at is, well, I'm making 75K a year. I don't want to take a job that pays me 50, 55K. I don't want to do that. I don't want to get my pay cut. Why should I? I get most of my money, what I was earning before, just by staying at home doing nothing, twiddling my thumbs, waiting for that great job to come along. This is the perversity of the welfare state. I'll never forget this. You want to talk to me about the real America? About the eternal America? Why I never give up on this country? Why I swear to you I love the Savage Nation? Why I love middle America? I was at a Chipotle. This was about 6 months ago. And I was waiting in line for my burrito. And there was a man behind the counter. And he was tired, I could tell. And I even said to him, I said, hey, you look tired. A little bit overweight, a little pudgy, maybe about 50-ish. He said, yeah. He said, listen, I've been working all day. I do construction. I go, really? I go, you do construction? I go, what are you doing here? My daughter is sick. She needs an operation. I don't want a government handout. I can't afford to pay for my daughter's operation on my salary at the construction site. So I'm taking this job, and I'm going to, the money that I get from this job, I'm going to use to pay for her operation. And once her operation is done, I'm quitting this job. This man was working two jobs, 16 hours a day, to help pay for his daughter's operation. He didn't ask for a government handout. He doesn't ask for the federal government to pay for his daughter's operation. He did it himself. He was a father. He was a husband. He was a family man. He was a citizen. My friends, this is the America of our founding fathers. This is the America of the Tea Party movement. This is the America of the Savage Nation. And it is why I am proud to say I am a conservative nationalist. And this is why, together, we must say once and for all, no more crony capitalism. We want our country back, and we want it now. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Go to michaelsavage.com. There are some absolute must-read stories. Here is one in the London Daily Mail. You want to talk about how far Britain has fallen. I don't know what it is. What can explain the moral and spiritual collapse of Britain? I don't know, honestly. I don't know if it's the bad food. I don't know if it's the water. I don't know if it's the bad dental hygiene. I don't know what it is. But pagan prisoners given time off to worship sun god. I kid you not. It's a true story. In Britain, prisoners are given 4 days off to celebrate a celestial deity with, quote, unabashed sexuality and promiscuity. In other words, you not only have to celebrate the sun god, you have to basically do it by conducting orgies. You can go out and have sex. You have 4 days off to go and have as much sex as you need or want. This is what Britain has been reduced to, the land of the Magna Carta. the land of Shakespeare, the land that in fact was once such a religious nation that it persecuted its dissenters, and these dissenters, the Puritans, came to America. This is how religious England once used to be, that in fact they couldn't tolerate any dissent or criticism of the Church of England. And now they're worshiping a sun god. Pagan prisoners now have rights to go and basically have sex. This is how far England has fallen. My friends, what we are seeing around us, especially in Europe, but even here in America, but it is so pronounced in Europe, is you are now seeing the collapse of an entire civilization, the death of our Judeo-Christian heritage. And we are not going forward. This is the great lie of the progressives. We are going backwards. We are re-paganizing. We are re-barbarizing ourselves. Just like the old pagans, we now murder children, except today it's done under abortion. Now, just like in those days, we don't read. All we're fascinated with is iPods and music and DVDs and CDs. And of course, we either worship the sun god or Mother Earth. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Let's go to Stephen in Florida on line one. Stephen, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Mr. Cooner. At the beginning of your segment, you made the mention with reference to the WikiLeaks guy that America was the greatest superpower in the history of the world. And you've gone on to talk about all kinds of things that are going very seriously wrong in this country, and I got to agree with you on just about every one of them. But here's the question. Why would we want to be a superpower if this is the cost? Wouldn't it be better to be a free republic that's able to actually protect the freedoms of its own people?
Well, Stephen, you make a good point, but my question to you would be a simple one. Why do you see the two as contradictory?
Because throughout history, I've seen that as countries become great and they learn to project their power abroad, that power ultimately strengthens the state at home, and it legitimizes the state at home. Today is Pearl Harbor Day, and I don't want to besmirch the memory of that horrible, horrible day. But, as soon as that attack occurred, and America found itself in the middle of World War II, all of the domestic criticism of the New Deal and of Franklin Roosevelt went away. That war cemented the New Deal in this country, and we're still dealing with the consequences of that today.
Stephen, here's the thing. I mean, look, yes, you're right. On some level, it ended the criticism of the New Deal. But here is the dirty deed that nobody wants to talk about. We essentially bought into socialism in the 1930s. Roosevelt won that argument. I mean, he won it in the sense of politically winning it. I think he was wrong on the merits. The New Deal was a complete disaster for this country. So the question that then faced us in 1940 and 1941 was whether we were going to allow Adolf Hitler and Japan to dominate the world. And so they attacked us on Pearl Harbor. And then this is the point that everybody forgets. We could never have gone to war in Europe unless Hitler declared war upon us. So when we were attacked on Pearl Harbor, FDR was saying, well, I got to, you know, draft a war resolution, but it can only be against Japan. And then 2 days later, Hitler made the greatest mistake he would ever make in the war. It cost him his empire. It cost him the Third Reich. It cost him everything. He declared war upon the United States. So it was then a question of, do you fight back? Or do you allow yourself to be defeated and conquered and humiliated? So we had no choice but to fight back. Now, Stephen, this is the larger point. When this country was born in 1776, and we fought and threw out the British, we were destined to be a superpower. Now, how you use that power is something else. But it's sort of like you. If you are born to be 6'8", 350 pounds of solid muscle, that's what you were born. That's your destiny. The question is, how do you use your power? We are a country the size of a continent. We have the most vibrant, dynamic economy in the world. We have the greatest political document the world has ever seen. We have inherited institutions and traditions that are the envy of the world. What I used to always teach to my students before I got into journalism when I was a university professor was I always asked them this. Poverty is the natural state of the world. You see, you have been brainwashed by 2 centuries of Marxist thinking to say, why are people poor? Everybody is poor. Everybody's always been poor. What makes you rich? What makes you free? This is what the founding fathers were obsessed with. Madison, Jefferson, Washington, Franklin, they were students of history. You see, unlike that yo-yo in the White House, that con man, unlike that fraud, John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and all these other phony Republicans, as long as these criminal Democrats, these men were learned men. They studied ancient Greece, ancient Rome, medieval Europe, the Italian Renaissance. And they said, what creates a republic? What makes a free society? What makes a wealthy society? And they invented the Constitution. They invented our entire system of checks and balances and separation of powers. Then we were on the path towards becoming the freest and hence the richest and hence the most powerful country in the history of the world. For most of our history, we have used that power to fight evil and defend justice and what is good. And now, at the apex of our power, where we defeated the Soviet Union, we crushed communism in Eastern Europe. Never were we stronger. We strode the world like a colossus. We could do anything we want. And instead of us saying, we are going to now use our power to fix this country, to fix our economy, to shore up our borders, to fix our fraying culture. We have a culture of death. We need to have a culture of life. We need to return to our founding principles. We are going further and further and further away. And so now, a country with more missiles than anybody, with more tanks than anybody, with the strongest military on the face of the earth, cannot defeat a bunch of primitive cave dwellers in Afghanistan and in Iraq, in Yemen, in Pakistan. Literally, this son of a Saudi billionaire who's running around half naked somewhere in the tribal areas of Pakistan, Osama bin Laden, no underwear. The guy is practically half nude. Who told his followers 10 years ago when the Twin Towers came down, we defeated the Soviet Empire in Afghanistan. We crushed the Red Army. America will be easier. He is being proven right. Because of our impotence, because our lack of will, because of our lack of determination. The lesson of Pearl Harbor, Stephen, members of the Savage Nation, is this. If Imperial Japan could not defeat us, if Nazi Germany could not defeat us, do you know what Hitler was? I used to say this to my students. You take that victory for granted. You don't know Adolf Hitler. You don't know Nazi Germany. This was the most powerful military on the face of the earth. Utterly ruthless, utterly efficient. They conquered Europe. They smashed France. They went deep into Russia. This man was an unstoppable juggernaut. And now all of these leftists that condemn him, they loved him in the 1930s. This is the great myth and lie of the 20th century. FDR admired him. The socialists admired him. He was a national socialist. They loved his. When Adolf Hitler spoke in the 1930s, he was speaking like a progressive. This is the great lie. It was conservatives that opposed him. It wasn't the left. They loved him. This man had Europe at his feet. This is a man who united 80 million Germans and put them on the march. Do you know what it is to have defeated them? And if we defeated Hitler, and we defeated Imperial Japan, and we defeated the Soviet Empire, you're telling me weak, naked milk? It is to our everlasting shame that we can't defeat them. So when people say to me, Jeff, are we a republic or are we an empire? I say this, we are a great republic. We are the last best hope of mankind. But my friends, to be the last best hope of mankind, you have to understand the world not as you wish it to be, but as it is. We are the exception. We are what is rare. We are what is unique, not the world. Tyranny, corruption, barbarism, socialism, poverty, that's the way of the world. That's what our founding fathers told us. But here on this land, on this soil, we will produce something the world has never seen before. And we did it. We are the inheritors. Our birthright is a free men and free women. Where is the pride? Where is our honor? Where is our memory? Today is Pearl Harbor Day. You think those men died so we can cave to the jihadists? So we can stand there and allow a Ground Zero mosque to be built? So we can stand there and put rules of engagement upon our soldiers that no military could win? I don't care who it is. You're telling me that if you can't shoot at civilians, you can't shoot at villages? You can't win. If you can't fire your gun, you can't win. We can't even say we're in a war with radical Islam. This is how far we've fallen. So what I say to you is very simple. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We have justice on our side. We have truth on our side. We have history on our side. We are Americans. All we have to do is not look forward. We don't have to look at Europe. The stupidest thing I ever heard Obama say of all of his stupid things is he wants to be a citizen of the world. When he was in Berlin before he won the election. Why would you want to be a citizen of the world? The world is not a country. There's no passport. There's no borders or boundaries. You are the citizen of America, sir. The greatest country that ever was. Why would you want to be the citizen of anything other than America? That's what I don't understand. Europe has nothing to teach us. They can only learn from us. We used to understand that. We no longer do. Let's go to Ned.
Hey, Ben, I'm a fellow capitalist and a Mad Hatter, and I'm appalled at Big Sis Napolitano's agent's inquiry about your...
No, I mean, I told him, I said, look, I don't know the name of the cologne. My wife bought it for me. Now pat me down. Grope me. Get your thrill.
That's all wrong, Jeff. But anyway, I got to back up my man Mike on this unemployment thing, brother.
Go ahead. Shoot.
Okay, man. Taking over 50% of our manufacturing base, man. And when they tell you you have to compete globally, they're telling you you have to be a slave like the Chinese are slaves.
Ned, I mean, you are so right. And Ned, I can't thank you enough for this call. This is the other thing. I've talked just last 10 minutes. I've been talking about foreign policy. We are industrial policy, our immigration policy, our economic policy. We have sold this country down the river. Our manufacturing, our jobs, many even of our weapons production have been outsourced to China. We have sold out the American worker. We have sold out the working class. And it began, again, this is why I tell you I'm a conservative nationalist. I'm not some Republican shill. It began under Bush Sr. He was the one that pushed NAFTA. All of these uber free traders among the Republicans, all of them, the open borders free trade crowd, the Wall Street Journal crowd. Oh, we have to have free trade with Mexico. We have to have free trade with China. We have to have free trade with everybody around the world. What happened when Clinton signed NAFTA? Ross Perot predicted a giant sucking sound. He was right. But that sucking sound didn't just lead south. It led east. And it led west. And it went all the way to China. And so now you have the Chinese who use slave labor through what is called a slave labor camp. Gulag was the term that was used in Russia. Gulags, slave labor camps, where you have political prisoners, many of them Christians, who are persecuted simply for believing that Jesus Christ is their Lord and Savior. You have millions of slave laborers who work, for example, in Nike factories, and they produce Nike shoes. And then they have their front stores, their little distribution network in America called Walmart. And they dump these sneakers here in Walmart, along with everything else. And so we rush and we buy those sneakers and we go, oh my God, this is so good for the American consumer. Yes, it's cheap for the American consumer. But who's got the money to buy them? Plants are closing down everywhere. Go to the Midwest. Go to Michigan. You are seeing the hollowed remains of a once great industrial civilization. There's nothing left for us to outsource. We have destroyed our manufacturing and industrial base. So when we talk about Pearl Harbor, think of the arsenal of democracy. How did we win that war? Look at the plants in Cleveland and Chicago and Detroit and Milwaukee that made us build tanks and planes and jeeps that were able to produce all the weapons we needed to win a world war. Today, we couldn't win a world war. The Chinese have us over a barrel. We can't produce tanks. We can't produce fighter jets. We have to ask the Chinese to produce it for us. So I ask all of you, in the end, if we are not willing to defend our country, if we are not willing to put America first, who will? This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on a Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Michael Savage Show here on the Savage Nation. Michael, I just want to thank you once again, my buddy, for the incredible honor and opportunity to fill in for you. I can't tell you what a pleasure it is. For all of you listeners of the Savage Nation, you can just go to the Washington Times, read my column every Friday, K-U-H, N as in Nancy, E-R is my last name, K-U-H-N-E-R. Very quickly, before we go, there is a key story I want all of you to focus in on. You thought the Fairness Doctrine was no longer in play. Guess again. The Federal Communications Commission commissioner, the man who heads the FCC, a Democratic appointee, Michael Copps, is now pushing for the Fairness Doctrine through the back door. He's now saying that talk radio, media outlets, the news, they have to now be regulated by the federal government. They have to pass a, quote, public values test every few years. If radio station owners, if broadcasters want to renew their licenses, they have to show that they've passed a public values test. Now, many of you are going to say, Jeff, what does he mean by a public values test? Well, according to this fascist, Michael Copps, this public values test is ideological diversity. You see, there's too much conservative dominance of talk radio. You have too many people like Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. And so we have to make sure that radio stations have all sides, all points of view, including liberal, socialist, leftist views that we get from the mainstream, lamestream media every day. And so what they are trying to do is regulate the airwaves. They are trying to marginalize and ostracize conservatives. And this is aimed directly at the likes of Michael Savage and myself and other conservative talk show hosts. You see, what the liberals in America are trying to do through this communist fascist Michael Copps is they are trying to essentially criminalize conservative speech. Just as Savage was banned from Britain, they don't want to ban him here. No, that's a little bit too much. That's a little bit too obvious. So what they're going to do is they're going to regulate him. They're going to force diversity, which means they're going to force the likes of Savage and others off the air if they can. That's their strategy. So my question to the libs is as follows. To all these leftists and liberals, what are you afraid of? You can't take a couple of Michael Savages? You can't take a war of ideas? My friends, we have seen the totalitarian nature of the left. And unless we safeguard our freedoms, we will even lose conservative talk radio. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.